All right, this is getting a little relentless. Chris, what are we listening to?
you got three more days. Good Night, Sweetheart, Good Night by the Spaniels. A doo-wop era classic, end-of-the-road song.
Have you planned the next three?
No, I know what I'm going to do on Friday, but I got to come up with something for the next 2 days.
Chris Harrington joins us now. So, of interest, I want to get to the piece that you wrote, and a lot of these things we talked about yesterday. Well, first, Grizzlies play the Spurs tonight.
Yep.
Ja is questionable. Wemby's questionable.
Yes. If I had to bet, I would bet that both play. But questionable is questionable, and so we won't know, until some point later. Wemby was injured and missed the last couple games or whatever and made the trip. And I think the implication was he made the trip with the intent to play. And so we'll see. I mean, they could change their mind on that, but it seems likely that he's going to play. And I got to assume Ja will, too. I mean, he's been to be questionable 2 games in a row with that kind of day-to-day injury and not play seems sort of unlikely to me.
They've played the Spurs twice before without Wemby, lost both times sort of in similar fashion, as I recall. The Spurs, we haven't talked a lot about this, but since we've last talked about them, they dominated Oklahoma City.
Beat them 3 times, yeah.
If they are healthy... How do you look at the Spurs? Is it now a toss up? Who's going to come out of the West? Or what are we thinking?
It could be. I think most people would still favor the Thunder, and also if they're healthy, would favor the Nuggets over the Spurs. But Wemby's the kind of player who can change your timeline, your expectation timeline. There are these guys in NBA history, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the Shaquille O'Neal, the Tim Duncan. There are these generational big men who like. They don't operate on the same timetable as regular basketball players do. And Wemby might be that guy. I mean, they're 25-10, and he hasn't actually played that much. He's missed a lot of time. And there have been stretches, especially beginning of the season, where he was just overwhelming. And so is he going to be overwhelming in the playoffs? If he's overwhelming in the playoffs, all bets are off.
Right. There's also, and you've talked about this with respect to Ja and the Grizzlies, the timeline is accelerated with Wemby because he's so dominant so fast. But it's also... There is some urgency to it because you wonder how breakable he is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if San Antonio would accept the word urgency, but I do think it's a good point that you don't assume the best is going to happen in 7 years. The best might be this year or next year. And if he is a top 10 player in the league now, which he is, like, what do you wait? What is there to wait on? You know. And so they have De'Aaron Fox, who's in his prime. They have Devin Vassell, who is actually injured now tonight, who's basically in his prime. They have these two young guards who are not in their prime. They're a rookie and a second-year player, and Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle, but they're good already. Stephon Castle was rookie of the year last year. He's taking a step forward. And the thing that's interesting about them relative to the OKC thing, with Denver, it's like they got Jokic, you know, and the Jokic-Murray two-man game was a proven title-winning sort of fulcrum of an offense. With the Spurs, they have Wemby, who's the trump card for everything, but they have the athleticism and depth on the perimeter that matches up with OKC, and very few teams around the league match up with that on the perimeter. Grizzlies certainly didn't last year.
Do you think – it's funny, when earlier in the season when Oklahoma City was running through everybody and there was this talk of the Giannis, will Giannis be traded? If he's traded, where would he want to go to New York or whatever? And there'd be talk about Oklahoma City could do this easily, right?
Yeah.
And I was always of the view, like, why would they? They can run through everybody without Giannis. Like, do you think the fact that there are, like, there's 3 legitimate contending teams, maybe Houston if you want to include them, in the West.
Right.
Does it suggest that one of those teams should, if Wemby is amenable, I mean, if Giannis is amenable to it, think about that?
It's interesting. The Nuggets don't really have the wherewithal to do that.
Right.
The Spurs and the Thunder probably do. I think the Spurs actually would be less likely to do that than the Thunder because that would require breaking up those guards, the Harper and Castle, and I think they're really in on that with Wemby going forward. The Thunder is interesting because it does not seem like the kind of thing they would do and that Sam Presti would do, and they probably won't.
Right.
But the Warriors traded for Kevin Durant after they'd already won a title,
right?
And that would be a similar kind of move, and you could look at it and say – you know, the real separation that we have from these other teams is not as great as we thought. And maybe it's worth it. We have so many assets. It's not like we have to give up everything we got to make this happen. We have to give up like a third of what we got, and we still got all this stuff. Maybe that's a team that would consider that. It doesn't sound like that's on the table for anyone, because it sounds like it could be smoke screens. We'll find out in the coming weeks. It seems like Milwaukee is not going to move Giannis
right
in season, and he's not going to force them to move him, and it seems like it's just not going to happen.
So that will be that. Okay. The other thing that happened since we last spoke was there's a report that Trae Young, that they have been, that Atlanta is letting Trae Young and his people explore trades, whatever else. Everyone seems to be ready to move on from that experience.
We're breaking yet more new ground in NBA reporting on this one. Yeah. Because it's not like Shams is going to name all the agents and agencies when he's reporting the trade that's been agreed to. He's naming all the agents and agencies in the tweet announcing they're going to pursue a trade.
Did he name all the agencies?
Yeah, according to so-and-so, so-and-so sports.
So-and-so and all, sports.
Which leads me to believe that like they got something sort of in place for all this stuff to be coming out.
So, and then Mark Stein said it could be the Wizards.
Yes.
A lot of the, in the Sean story, it just sounded like you could just as well be writing about Ja. Like, who wants him? Like,
except Ja doesn't have an agent.
Except Ja doesn't have an agent.
Right. His representation, I should say.
But it does show that underline the difficulty of this, right? Like, you, in order to trade Young, you have to have someone want Trae Young. Now, it's a very different situation because Trae Young is a free agent or has a team. He has his own option at the end of this year.
Right.
Whereas, as you pointed out, Ja's got another 2 years here, right? Yeah. After this one.
Is that a good or bad? It's separate to interpretation from different teams.
I don't know. What do you make all that?
It sounds like Atlanta is certainly much further down the line of deciding to trade their point guard and actually trading their point guard. There's still no indication the Grizzlies are interested in trading Ja Morant. All of that is just pure speculation. It's just, and for me, it is, and I've written about this, it is trying to call aside the thicket of stuff and just look at the underlying fundamentals, almost disregarding what people say. Like, the underlying fundamentals are more important than what someone says in front of a microphone to me.
Right.
And the underlying fundamentals of Ja Morant is he was extension eligible. They were not interested in giving him an extension. Nothing has changed. Whatever resistance they had, nothing this season has happened that would change that resistance.
Right.
And the clock is ticking on his contract. And unless they want to get to a Dillon Brooks situation where they play out a final year and things get messy, they have two buttons in front of them. They have the extension button and the trade button. And I think the forces suggest you need to push one of those buttons sometime in the next year and a half. So to me, I set everything else aside and I look at that. And that suggests to me they have to be at least willing to entertain the idea of a Ja Morant trade. There's no indication. No one said anything. No one's reported anything in that regard. But it sounds like Atlanta is further down the road. Maybe the Grizzlies aren't on the road at all, but Atlanta's further down the road. And it sounds like there's just so much out there. At this point, it would be surprising if it didn't happen.
It's hard sometimes. Like, pushing the trade button is easier when it's Desmond Bane.
Yeah.
Or even if it were Jaren.
100%.
Than it is when it's Ja Morant. And harder to push with Ja than it is with Trae Young. Like, Trae Young, evidently, the reporting is that there was some thought he might go to Sacramento, but Sacramento isn't interested. The only team that appears to be interested is Washington.
Yes, but there's, I don't know if you've seen this, there's also reporting that Atlanta might have to attach a pick with Trae Young to send him to Washington. And so,
and he's less toxic, with all due respect, than Ja right now.
Subject to interpretation, but there's certainly less drama around him. Yeah.
There's less drama. And they're going to, I didn't see that. That they would have to attach, because the money is around CJ McCollum, right?
CJ McCollum, expiring contract, would be the primary contract piece coming back from Washington. I'm sure there would be some other stuff on the edges. And then it would be Trae Young. And then, again, the report is that there may be a draft asset. Atlanta's got two picks in this coming draft. They have the really good one that's going to be in the lottery. They're not going to send that. But do they send
another first round pick?
You know, their lesser pick? You know, I don't know.
Even that's their own, right? Is that?
I think it's more complicated.
More complicated than that. I see. But that would be a bitter pill to think that, in order to get rid of Ja, to move Ja, you would have to attach assets to.
Right now, it would, based on, I don't know what all the swaps are, but it's currently set up. Atlanta would have the second pick, which is from New Orleans, and they would have the 16th pick from Cleveland, probably from the DeAndre Hunter trade. So maybe, you know, that pick could be in play.
How do you like Trae Young with the 16th pick to the Wizards.
If they're getting a pick with him, I kind of like that for the Wizards because I don't think it really messes up, you know, their lottery prospects for this season, and they could certainly just not, you know, oh, he's got an injury. I mean, so so I don't. To me, that's not a move they're making to go all in for this season. I think they have so much young talent already. They need the one, like, a, you know, number one guy, which they're hoping to get in this lottery. But at some point, you know, you got all these young guys. Young guys get older. You can't just do this forever. And I think they have a decent, you know, assemblage of young players. They have played better. They started 1-15. They're now 9-25. So they're 8-10 in their last, including two wins over the Grizzlies. So they're starting to play better. Trae Young is not old. I think that's a team that you add Trae Young and you get a draft asset to do it. And, you know, you add a lottery pick, that team could be in the mix next year. I don't hate that for Washington.
Is it
by in the mix? I mean, in the mix for a playoff
spot. It a little bit? Didn't Portland do something like that? I mean, they had Lillard, but they also added, who else did they add?
We traded for Drew Holiday.
Right.
Somewhat different situation. I don't.
How do you feel about this from Atlanta's perspective?
Well, they have been better without Trae Young this year. I think it's a situation where it's less about what you get for Trae Young, especially if you're having to attach something to it. Then you're just trying to like move on and get that number off your books next year and give yourself flexibility to build this other kind of team around, you know, some of the other players you have who are working out. And plus they have this New Orleans pick coming. And whatever happens with that, you know.
The problem is Trae Young wants to be paid Trae Young money. He doesn't want
to
get,
everybody wants to be paid Trae Young money. But, like, know, most people aren't going to be paid Trae Young money, including Trae Young.
You don't think in Washington
John Morant's going to want Trae Young money on an extension, and guess what? He's not going to get that money from the Grizzlies or anyone else unless something changes.
It's another reason when we were talking about whether he'd be a better fit somewhere else, whether it would work better. You might be more inclined to accept less money from a place that was not the place that where you'd made your bones. You know what I mean?
I think that's very possible, especially if it were a place where there's another established guy who it's sort of their team and you're willing to like be the Robin to the Batman a little bit. Yeah.
All right. On the on all of this, piece up at the Daily Memphian went up yesterday. I'd urge people to read it. I won't get into all of this, but you did put some numbers to the Jazz stuff. Of his last 199 games, of the Grizzlies' last 199 games.
I think that's the last three seasons, including this.
He has played 77 of them for 39%.
Yeah, and obviously there's a thumb on the scale. You could argue that, like, the year 3 years ago, you have a 25-game suspension and a season-ending injury. Those are both special circumstances that are beyond the day-to-day durability. But then I also, like, you know, so you take that out, and now it's like he's played 58% of the games the last two seasons.
Even if you excuse the – and I don't know the injuries that special circle. I mean, he's going to – maybe special circle, but whatever.
A season-ending torn labrum is not your day-to-day durability.
All right, we're going to take those two out. It's still only 58% of them.
Of the last season and a half, this year and last year, which just strips and drabs and little stuff, and, oh, there's an ankle here, there's a calf here, there's a one-game team suspension here, there's a whatever,
there's a
you know. That's what it's added up to. So it's on the floor 58% of the time. That's bad enough, but like what percentage of those 58% are you playing all-star level basketball, you know? So you start cutting the math down, and if you're getting less than half the games you play, you have your sensible best player playing on the floor playing well, it's obviously a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. And then you wrote about Cam Spencer. He had gone double figures for 14 straight games, and over the last four, 25 points
total.
2 of 13 from three?
From
three. What's happening there? You forgot how to shoot?
I think the defensive attention is ratcheted up on him. I think he has earned more attention, and now he's getting more attention, and now he has to adjust to the more attention. That's when I watched the Lakers game, I didn't say, oh, I can't, you know, guys miss shots. Even the best players, miss shooters miss shots. I looked at that and said, oh, Marcus Smart's all over this dude, and they're throwing a trap at him at midcourt to start the second half. And like, they're really taxing his ball handling and athleticism. And, you know, these are the adjustments. So the teams adjust to you, you got to adjust to that.
It's teams adjust to him, but they also have an easier time adjusting him when there's crap around him.
Well, that's the problem.
Like, you know what I mean? Everyone's diminished by the fact that so many people are missing.
All season long, and this is compounded by the injury, but it's also somewhat intrinsic to the roster. I think the roster is talented, but it's talented in a way that has a lot of subpar athletes on it.
Right.
And when you have lineups where you suddenly you're congregating these guys, you look up and it's, Cam Spencer and Jalen Wells and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jock Landale. It's like, you know, you're playing against NBA players here, and you can have one or two of these guys because they're skilled in other ways.
Right.
But the athleticism divide, and to me, this really jumped out in that Philly game. They lost in overtime. When they put those bench-heavy units out there, they just could not keep up athletically with those Philly lineups.
Okay, and then finally, you wrote about how well KCP has been playing. Is he, by the way, what's his future with the Grizzlies? How does KCP fit into all of this?
He has a player option next season for roughly $20 million. I don't remember the exact number. I mean, that's an option he's going to take at this stage of his career. He's certainly on the open market, he would not get $20 million. Right. So he'll take that option, and the Grizzlies will either have him on the team at $20 million, or they will trade him on that figure, or they will, in theory, they could buy him out or stretch him or right. whatever. I mean, there are different ways they could go. I don't think it depends on partly where the Grizzlies are trying to go. I think if the Grizzlies take a turn towards, okay, we're focusing on the Coward Edie era. We're moving into the Coward Edie area in a more full-throated way. Right. Their payroll situation is going to be such that having KCP for 1 year, $20 million, is not going to be a big deal. Because if they're trading John Morant, they're going to...
And he doesn't have, at that number, he won't have value as a trade.
He would have utility. Yes. He would not have value.
Right, but he won't have value. Yes. Right.
He would be an easy player to include in a trade as a building block to get to a salary match. But he is not going to have value in a trade.
If, by the way, they do that, reorient themselves towards the...
Yeah, and I'm not saying they will, but that's obviously, when you look at the game board, that's one potential path. Yeah.
It seems unlikely that would happen before or concurrent with this trade deadline, right? That would be this summer, much more likely to be
this
summer.
Well, I wrote this last week that I felt the logic suggested waiting until the summer. They've done nothing but lose games and get more injuries since then.
Right.
I think that has a chance. I think these incentives can shift as circumstances shift. I would still feel that way, but slightly less so than I did a week and a half ago.
Spurs tonight, Suns tomorrow, then the Thunder, and then, as you point out, even the breather is not quite the breather that won.
Brooklyn, much like Washington, get off to a bad start, and they've been playing basically 500 ball for the last several weeks, including wins at Philadelphia and at Minnesota.
Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it. We got Fish on Friday coming on Tuesday. Coming up next, we'll do that. Next one, we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman. He is, of course, the author of three New York Times bestsellers. Most recently, One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also, three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award. And... okay, here's the thing, Charles. Normally I say a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, but I got an email from a guy. I won't tell you his name because I wasn't sure he wanted me to use it. And he wrote...
He's not just a guy.
No, yeah, listener.
He's a listener.
Right? You've interrupted me already. It's good, as is appropriate for our last show. I was disappointed to hear you were leaving the airways and retiring from your radio show. Over the years, I've enjoyed it very much, although I didn't have the opportunity to listen as much as I would have liked, but I especially tuned in to the segments with Charles Fishman. They were intelligent, thought-provoking, and sometimes funny. Lots, by the way, a lot of clamoring for you to continue. In reaction to all of this, there's been a lot of pro-Fishman fallout, which certainly shocked me. Anyway, he went on to say this. However, I do have a bone to pick. In Charles' introduction, you referred to him as a former Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. There are no tugboats on the Mississippi River. The vessels that push the barges up and down the Mississippi are towboats. A small point maybe, but they are significantly different, and every time you said it, I would shout at the radio, towboat, not tugboat. So there you go. And this guy is, by the way, someone who knows. He's professor and director emeritus of the Intermodal Freight Transportation Institute at the University of Memphis. What say you?
Well, I could tell you what the Intermodal Freight Institute does, so that's nice. And he's right, of course, but sometimes you're talking to people who work the river, and sometimes you're talking to ordinary people. And ordinary people have no idea what a push boat is. You know, it's just I not.
See. So we use just, tugboat shorthand because they know what it is.
We use tugboat generically.
But you do acknowledge. You
they
didn't,
aren't tugboats because they don't pull up and tug anything. They actually
you didn't
are
tug.
Strapped on to barges like outboard motors, as anybody who lives in Memphis knows, and they push. And so
see.
There you go.
I see. By the way, this is going to be a very different Fish on Friday on Tuesday, the last one.
How so? How so?
Because you didn't send me a list of what we're going to talk about.
If you look in your text messages, the list is right there. It's right there. Right there. It says list. First show of the year. Do we have some resolution?
I don't have this.
Economic
for state. Some reason, didn't go through. Didn't go through. I do not
it's
have
right
that.
Right above, I don't have a list.
don't. Okay. It's not
this
there.
Is a little too
I don't
insidery.
Have it. That's fine, it's but I don't have insidery. It. Weirdly enough, didn't get it. Didn't get it.
Okay,
so
I'm copying it and sending it again. There you go. See if you get it now.
Maybe what's happened
right
is...
This is really not the...
Maybe what so, happened is... Well, we're going to have you back again on Friday. We're going to have you back again on
so
Friday.
This is not the way to
for
go
the,
out.
It's for the farewell.
Logistics. We got so much to talk about today.
All right, what do you
so
want to
anyway,
talk about?
Anyway...
Yeah.
This has been great. I just want to say that. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy my listeners. And if you think you're going to miss Fish on Friday on Tuesday, I never miss. I almost never take a week off. You know, make us an offer. Make Jeff an offer. Maybe we'll do.
There's been clamoring for a podcast. There's been clamoring for a podcast.
We'll do birthday parties.
Yeah, birthday parties.
Whatever. We'll come in person.
Bar mitzvahs. We'll do bar mitzvahs and birthday parties.
And see, Apple is so objecting to the end of it that they've canceled the list. Now I sent it to the group, you and Jeffrey. Okay.
Yes. What do you want to start with?
We always talk on the first show of the year about, you know, resolutions, what happened. My two resolutions last year, which you probably don't remember, were to go to the gym, to take advantage of the gym membership that my children imposed on me as a post-60-year-old, and to get a password manager so my passwords were better and I didn't have to remember.
Okay, how's this gone?
And you know what? I did both those in 2025.
Let's move on. Everyone wants to go to the gym more. I want to move on to the other
I
one.
Do.
I want to go to the password manager because I don't have that. I just have one password that I use for everything or some very,
but
very.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? The best password manager is called
OnePassword. What does it do for you? How does it work? What's a password?
A password manager has you have a password for that password manager. And that password is really long. My password is. The password for mine is 20 or 30 characters. Okay. It's often a sentence or the first letters of a sentence. It's not your birthday. It's not your anniversary. It's not your first dog's name. It's a complicated password. And then that piece of software logs every password for your bank account, for your credit cards, for your newspaper subscriptions, which I want you to have. And it will make up really good passwords for your bank account, for your 401k, if you want it to. Those will be the, you know, SK exclamation point ampersand BR capital C, like, you know, totally random. And it just keeps track of them. And I have it on my phone and on my computer. I don't know why the dog is barking. And it makes your whole life more secure. It probably takes 15 minutes.
Do you have to memorize
place.
Your long password every time?
Yes, you absolutely do. In fact, we not only have it memorized, our son has both my password and my wife's password, just in case something happens to us or our brains. And they're also written on a piece of paper and taped to the inside of a cabinet door.
We'll know if we ever break into the Fishman residence.
It's like your 401k. It changes your life.
Well, it's weird. It's weird you should say that because my resolution was to kidnap the leader of a foreign country. And I haven't done it yet, but you know we're doing it. So what'd you think?
We took him into custody.
We arrested a criminal, a hardened criminal who was
arrested a hardened criminal.
We arrested this is. I know we don't talk politics on this segment, but this is a pretty striking moment, isn't it?
Well, what's most striking about it is that Donald Trump didn't mention democracy once. He has not changed the regime in Venezuela. The people in charge in Venezuela are the vice president, the head of the National Police Force, the head of the National Intelligence Service, Those three people are no different than Maduro. What they're doing now is they're scared the gravy train is over. So when Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State of the United States, calls,
they mean they say, in Venezuela, they're scared. They're now that we've called their bluff, basically.
They're scared that Donald Trump is going to come arrest them just like he arrested their boss. So they're the people who implemented Maduro's policies. Venezuela, if whatever you object to at Venezuela,
yes,
those three people.
But if they start implementing, again, we can have our own objections to this, and I do. But if they start implementing U.S. policies, because now they know we mean business, haven't they achieved what evidently the administration wants to achieve? Sure, they're the same people, but as long as they comply.
Well, the head of the National Police Force and the head of the National Intelligence Service are in charge of repression of the people of Venezuela. The vice president has been in charge of the economy, which has shrunk by 70% during the Maduro regime. That's it's not socialism. They call themselves socialists.
Right. We should acknowledge he's a bad guy, right?
Maduro is a terrible guy, but you know what? The vice president, the head of the National Police Force, the head of the military intelligence service, the military, those people are bad guys too. And I don't think the vice president's under indictment, but the other two are already.
And you don't think they're gonna alter their approach, given that we just.
I think they're gonna do what they need to do to keep Marco Rubio and Donald Trump happy, which may be to open oil production in Venezuela to America and American companies. Donald Trump is saying that there's gonna be a flood of investment and American oil companies are gonna race down there and fix the oil. It is the largest reserves of oil anywhere in the world, but it's heavy oil. It's not an easy oil to get out. And oil prices are at $55 a barrel. They're historically low. That's why you can buy gas for $2.89 a gallon. That doesn't argue for investing in really expensive oil infrastructure in a country that has a history of seizing your $5 billion capital investment in new oil wells. So I think this is terrible. And threatening other countries in general, Greenland, like nobody's arguing that Venezuela is well run, that the people of Venezuela are well taken care of, that Venezuela's economy has been well taken care of, that the place is not in some ways
I actually wonder about this because, again, we're sensitive to the fact that I am at least sensitive to the fact that my politics aren't the politics of the things I believe aren't necessarily of all the listeners.
Right, the listeners.
I don't really understand, and this is maybe how people can stomach us threatening to take over Greenland. Like I honestly don't know the answer to that. I don't know, like, really? Like, Denmark is a part of NATO. We're a part of NATO. And we're literally, like, there's no drug dealer in charge of Greenland. There's no
institution that has kept the whole world safe and prosperous.
And once upon a time, we sort of try to ignore our imperialism of the past or whatever else and whatnot.
We're
better than that now. This is like, I don't understand it. Like, if you are the most Trumper of Trumpers, why do you want us threatening to take over Greenland for literally just because we want it? I don't understand that. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't understand why this doesn't strike people as, and obviously the guy's a bad guy, and there's a lot of Venezuelans who are celebrating this. And so that is to be noted in all of this, right? On the other hand, we just pardoned another drug dealer.
Yeah. You know what, though? It's rare. I would say to you, I want to move on.
I still don't have the list.
So you don't have anything.
What are we going to next? Good. What's next?
Let me tell you the list. You can take notes. We're going to talk about pizza and the end of pizza in America. We're going to talk about sushi. We're going to talk about a new drink system. We're going to talk about the guy who came up with one of the greatest inventions in auto history. The Wall Street Journal asks this week, have we had enough pizza in America?
The answer to that is no. By the way, we have not had enough pizza. Apparently,
you're a little bit of a one-off. Pizza was the second place restaurant cuisine and the second most common U.S. restaurant until very recently. Now, pizza is sixth.
Whoa!
Coffee shops are ahead of pizza.
I was going to have us guess. Coffee shops?
And I don't have all six. Mexican restaurants are ahead of pizza.
Like Chipotle and
stuff. Of course,
stuff.
Burger joints are ahead of pizza. There are 10% fewer pizza restaurants now than at that famous historic benchmark, the moment Fish on Friday on Tuesday started in March 2020. 10% fewer.
Aren't eating as much pizza?
Well, here's a wonderful statistic. As listeners know, we love comparable store sales.
Yep.
How did you do at this same outlet
last year, or
a year ago?
Uh-huh.
Comparable store sales at Pizza Hut have fallen 8 quarters in a row. That's 2 years.
But that's Pizza Hut. We know that Pizza Hut is old, tired, hasn't defined itself correctly.
Pizza Hut's for sale. You and I could buy it in retirement. It would be fun. Or you could buy Pizza Hut and I could buy Papa John's.
I'll buy Papa John's, thanks. I would take Papa John's.
Oh, you would take Papa John's over Pizza Hut?
Yeah, Papa John's. I know I don't like Papa John's, but lots of people like Papa John's. And it doesn't feel to me, Pizza Hut feels like Kmart. You know, a failing something that was big in the 70s.
Yeah,
you know,
fading brand. We've never in this house ordered Papa John's for delivery. I don't think ever in our lives. Here's what
I haven't this week.
Jeffrey hasn't this week.
You like Papa John's.
He likes Papa John's.
Here's what happened to pizza, which I think is interesting. Food delivery apps made every other kind of food just as easy to get. DoorDash and Uber Eats made it possible to get Thai food,
that
Vietnamese
makes all
food,
the
Indian,
sense in
right?
the world.
The
McDonald's, hell, McDonald's can be delivered
even
to
McDonald's
your Ubers.
Can
yeah,
be
right,
delivered
exactly.
to your house. And that and
it used to be if you were hungry at 10 at night, you could only have pizza brought to your house.
Exactly.
And now you can have anything brought
to your house.
You can have
Indian food. You can have any cuisine that's nearby, right? And the pizza restaurants, by and large, have sustained their delivery infrastructure, like Domino's. But the other restaurants never even built that infrastructure. They didn't hire drivers. They just let DoorDash do it. The other thing that's changed is that a lot of pizza places charge $20 for a single pizza once it's delivered, you know, or maybe even a little more, you know, $18.99 for the large pizza with two toppings.
It's still pretty cheap, honestly. It's still pretty cheap, but okay. All right, interesting. All right, pizza, sushi. Let's move right down the food groups.
Sushi is surging.
Of course it is.
The Wall Street Journal, again, our friends at the Wall Street Journal, had a story just 2 days ago, the headline of which just made me laugh out loud. Parents are going broke from their kids' sushi obsession. Different reporter at the Wall Street Journal. They have multiple reporters assigned
food,
to fast food.
On food, yeah.
A woman,
sushi isn't fast.
Do your kids eat sushi?
Absolutely. My kids eat sushi.
My kids are obsessed with sushi.
Absolutely eat sushi, yeah.
I don't. I know you.
And
sushi.
I eat sushi.
I love sushi.
Yeah.
My wife loves sushi. A woman in the story. The first woman in the story has a child. Elliot is 8 and Charlotte is 6, and she says, "Quote, introducing them to sushi was the worst financial decision of my life."
Well, that's the thing. Quote, you say pizza isn't cheap, but it's cheap compared to sushi.
They are like savages. They want to eat it all. That woman in particular has had to limit her 8-year-old and 6-year-old to one sushi outing a week at $150. Sushi sales just last year up 7%. That's twice the rate of the U.S. economy, of course. Another mother in the story says that when offered a choice, her 5-year-old and her 3-year-old, her 5-year-old and her 3-year-old always pick sushi over pizza. And there are now kids' birthday parties featuring sushi. There's never been a kid birthday party in the Fishman Wilson family
featuring sushi. Okay, sushi. So if you're going to get sushi or pizza sent to your house, watch how you're going to do this. Can you use this new driving system, revolutionary new driving system? Tell me about the new
it's
driving
system.
It's a new
system. Drink system, not a new driving
system. Damn it, I was scribbling. I scribbled it. This is what happens when the list.
You're going to get 7 copies of the list.
I haven't gotten a single copy of the list. Flying blind.
Fast food companies have those, you know, all you can drink soda fountains. You fill the cup. They hand you the cup. They are testing. I heard word of this about 6 months ago. And Coca-Cola has the fancy one where you can mix, you know, Fanta.
Boo! That's the worst.
Jeffrey, what? What's wrong?
The one that's like the all in one. You push the button.
Why is that bad?
It's gross. Like, none of it tastes right.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's designed to be sophisticated. It's interesting. Now they are testing a system where the cup they hand you has a QR code, and there's a little QR scanner next to the soda fountain. The soda fountain does not work. You scan the QR code,
and then it will dispense the proper drink in the proper amount.
18 seconds of dispensing. And if you only use 12 because you got a lot of ice, you can come back, scan your cup again.
Oh, God.
I'm out of all this.
Ridiculous.
And finish filling it up.
This is not progress.
I was going to say, this is progress?
It's being tested at Dollywood. Dollywood, right there in Tennessee.
What's the virtue? What's
the
virtue
of it?
Uh-huh.
Tracking a liquid that costs a restaurant 10 cents is wild. This screams, we hate our customers. This alone will keep me from ever taking my family to Dollywood.
Is the idea that it limits you to 18 cents? That's the idea? It's to conserve the fluid?
You get what you paid for. You get one medium drink. You get one large drink.
Screw you. Screw you. I think that's right.
Also, you know why McDonald's?
If America stands for anything, it's free.
It's overindulgence on soft drinks.
Soft drinks,
yes. Unlimited soft drinks. And you know why?
That's us.
Why?
Because the marginal cost of you filling the medium-sized drink cup again is zero. It's not even 10 cents. It doesn't cost them anything. I hope our resistance to this is epic. Okay, can we talk about one of the greatest inventions in auto history?
Yes.
I'm sure you know about it.
Of course we can.
We may have even talked about it at some point.
The wheel.
No. If you look at the dashboard of your car, the instrument panel of your car, right next to the gas gauge, there's a little arrow.
Yeah, it tells you which side the gas gauge is on.
Either to the left or the
right. Which side you need to fill up on, right? That one. Yeah.
The man who invented that arrow just died. A guy named Jim Moylan. In the auto world.
We didn't used to have that arrow.
I'm sorry?
We didn't used to have that arrow.
No, we did not. When you and I were growing up, we didn't have that arrow. And if you were driving
rental or someone else's car, you had to remember to get out and look or whatever. Yeah.
And you know what? That's how he came up with the ideas. Lifelong Ford engineer.
Uh-huh.
He was driving a Ford fleet vehicle from one side of the Ford campus in Detroit to another in a rainstorm. Another great invention, the light saying the gas tank is almost empty, came on. He pulled up at a company gas pump, and he was on the wrong side. It was pouring rain. He had to get back in the car, move the car, fill the car, and when he was done with his meeting, according to the story that he told, he didn't even take his raincoat off. He wrote a 4-sentence memo saying, I have an idea. The memo's on Twitter under Jim Farley, the CEO's Twitter handle. A 4-sentence memo on April 17th, 1986, saying this would be a great convenience. Let's put an indicator. His indicator was he drew a little drawing right on his memo, a tiny little gas pump on the side of the car that you should go on. And I think actually the triangle is much clearer, much simpler. And he never got a dime for the invention. It debuted, it seems like a long time. He wrote the memo April 17th, 1986. It was approved for use on all Ford vehicles in November. That's darn quick, 5 months later. It debuted in the Ford Thunderbird 1989. And
what a great thing. I'm looking at the memo now. People can look. It's called Product Convenience Suggestion.
It's called the Moylan Arrow after Jim Moylan, who died December 11th at 80. And Ford didn't patent it. He never got a dime. Every other car company copied it. And the current Ford CEO said, I think whose name is Jim Farley. I think of
Jim Moylan
every time I fill my gas tank. So that's nice, and it's nice. Everybody knows the arrow, and especially when you rent a car on vacation.
Even if all Ford product lines eventually locate on the same side, for the minor investment involved in the company's part, I think it would be a worthwhile convenience not only for two car families but also pool car users and especially car rental customers. James Moylan. That's fantastic.
Brilliant. It's a brilliant slash of insight.
That's a life well led.
Meanwhile, private equity firms are trying to make sure we don't get
six tenths of a dollar.
Right.
Anything else on the list that I didn't get?
Well, you know, The Olympics are coming up. There's a lot of stuff we're not going to get to talk about. There's a government shutdown coming in 3 weeks.
What?
Again?
We just did that.
It's been a while.
That's so last year. We just did that. We did that.
Right. January, let me see. It is January 30th. So watch for that. You'll have to make it through without Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, and Calkins. There's, of course, an election this year. The Winter Olympics is coming up.
True.
February 6th. And 60 Minutes did a wonderful story on a woman named Alyssa Liu, who is the current world women's figure skating champion. Alyssa, yep. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing your last name right, L-I-U. She retired at 16. She was exhausted from what it takes to be a champion.
She had been
a two-time national champion, exactly like you. Came back after 2 years, and the 60 Minutes piece at the end shows her training, doing leaps and falling on the ice 5 times in a row. And their point was, you never see this, but this is what it takes to be an Olympic champion. You have to fall on your butt, on your hip, on your thigh, covered in the sort of frost from the skating rink, groaning with pain, and then getting up. We'll tweet out that segment. Watch it. And we will see you
We're going to have
Friday.
A special edition of Fish on Friday
on Tuesday,
as it was originally
live
meant to
from
be.
The Fish on Friday studio.
All right, get out of here. Work on the list making between now and then.
Week.
Thank you. That's Charles. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson joins them at 11:25. Frank Bonner will join them at 1:25. Tim Murray will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff with Gabe at 5 o'clock. Also, Grizzlies tonight. Pregame at 6:30. Tip off with Eric at 7.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. Yep. But for now, our work is done.